Hello, everyone. Welcome to our Wednesday call. It is June 6, 2012. This is Kurt Mortensen, and this is our influence call for the week, where we give you a couple tools, some homework, ways to apply them, take your questions. Some of you are listening via the net. Some of you are live on the phone. Some of you doing replay. They are all fine with me. You can always ask questions over the phone or zap me a response through the net, be able to take your questions and make sure you understand what our tools of the day are today and that any other things that you're running into, that's what I am here for. So we're in June, almost halfway of the year. Hopefully you're meeting your goals or at least exceeding your goals. It's moving fast, that is for sure. But summer is here, and that's usually a good thing. So let's spend some time, try to judge this based on the questions I've been getting. And as far as that fun word, as persuaders, as negotiators, we all hear is no. So I want to give you a few techniques to A, don't get the no, and B, how to turn, if you do get the no, how to turn that no into yes. So you have to really kind of get into the mindset here of no and understanding the word no. One aspect of no, you have to realize you would much rather have them say no than I'll think about it. If they're really not interested, then you've totally lost them. Sometimes, even though it hurts our feelings, a no is a good thing. Okay, so that's one thing that we really have to understand with the word. Now, here, let's back up and talk about human nature a little bit. They're trying to be nice, we know that. But again, getting a no does tend to hurt our feelings. Now, here's one thing you need to understand. We're talking about, especially if you're in a business where you're doing anything long term. The thing that you want to write down in your notes is never get the no. This is what I'm saying. So you're talking to somebody, they're semi-interested, maybe the timing's not right, maybe something happened in their life, maybe you need to approach them 2, 3, 4 months from now. They're sitting on the fence. Just don't quite have them, but you know eventually they're going to do business with you. Now, in a situation like that, don't get the no. If you sense a no coming on, don't let them say it. Just say, well, hold on. I know there's a lot of things you're working on right now, and you're looking at this and this. Tell you what, can I come back in 2 months, and I want to be able to do this, this, and this. Keeps the door open, because if they mentally or physically say no, they've shut the door, and it's much harder to come back in 2 or 3 months. Now, you only use this if you know it's not the right time, they're sitting on the fence, and you want to keep the door open for 2, 3, 4 months down the road, even if it could be 2, 3 weeks down the road. So in that type of situation, don't get the no. Or if you're sensing they'll come out and say, no, I don't want you to make a decision right now. That's not what I'm looking for. There's some things that we both need to do. And then get permission to come together. And the guy's like, ooh, okay. And their tension will relieve, and you'll be able to put it on a calendar from 2 months, or even at least get permission to call them or email them. Keeps that door open. Because if they do say the no, that door is closed for a long, long time. So that's number one with the no. Another reason people tend to get no's, and it's one of the major persuasion blunders, is they tend to vomit. The 21 reasons, the 52 reasons, and you've given them 2 or 3 reasons not to do that. As I've looked at top persuaders, they aren't selling, they are consulting. Time and time again, that doctor-patient relationship. A doctor comes in, and they don't guess. If they did, you wouldn't like them. They know what's wrong with you. Deep down, they're pretty sure, but the expectations of the patient is for the ask questions. So the expectations of your prospect is ask questions. Now, when there's trust between a patient and a doctor, it's pretty difficult to ask too many questions. Top persuaders ask 3 times more questions than the average persuaders. They're consultants. They're listening. They're asking questions. And they'll tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. Because otherwise, you're just shooting darts, hoping something will stick. That's why you're getting the no, because you didn't fulfill their need, because you didn't even know their need. You assumed you knew their need. And that's important to know, because when they call you, you have to discover the need through questions. And if you're calling them, you need to create a need. So those are two very, very different phone calls. So the big kind of core package to really know what they want, of course, is the question side. Can great persuaders ask three times more questions? And they're better at listening. Now, I know I've been called to do listening training before, and I even though we all need it, it always causes a lot of tension. We have to change the title to effective communication because most people think that, oh, I can listen. Now, when I talk about listening, I'm talking about listening with your ears, your eyes, and your heart, reading their nonverbals, understanding them. And we all have work to do. We can all hear. Anybody, I'm talking about truly listening, not being concerned about what's saying next, not being concerned about lunch or the vacation you're going to take, but truly training yourself to treat them like the most important person in the world, to pause between responses that shows sincerity and confidence. You're not jumping to conclusions. You're not prejudging. I mean, you're truly listening. You're not looking at your watch or if a text goes off or you're not doing call waiting. You're not looking at other people. You're not looking at the sky. Wherever it is, you're truly listening. And if they're on the phone, you're doing, well, I see. Thanks for saying that. You can do that verbally. You know, face-to-face, you're doing that mostly physically. Over the phone, it tends to be more verbal. That's important because listening is the one. Well, number one is people skills. Number two is listening as far as skills that people rank themselves doing pretty good at. But when you ask their prospects, they're not even close. So that's the one that we tend to be in denial about. Say, really? Is truly listening with your ears, your eyes, and your heart. Now, here's the big one of the day. First of all, don't get the no. We're going to turn that into a yes. We'll talk about questions and listening. Excuse me. The other one is known as FITD, or foot in the door. This is important to understand. Let me just kind of paint the picture here. I'm basing everything that's on scientific studies. If there's a certain part of your presentation or the phone call, whatever it is, where you're getting the no, if there's a certain place where you're always getting the no, you need to take that down and to break it down into smaller yeses. You look at great persuasive presentations, it's a series of about 15 to 20 yeses. Even if they're mental yeses, they don't have to be vocalized. You see this in seminars. Hey, how many want to be wealthy? Hey, how many want to do this? And they're asking easy questions. People are raising their hands, making it easy. You never want to get a no during the presentation because it's like hitting a brick wall. Even lawyers. We train lawyers. They know exactly the answers, and they know when they're going to get the yeses and when they want to get the nos. Your job as a persuader is to always get the yeses. So once you get down to the 19th and 20th yes, it's easier for them to say yes because they've already said it 18 times. So here's my point. Here's the study. So go to college students. Follow me on this. So these are just introductory psychology students, and they went up to them and said, you know what? We're doing a study on thinking processes, sensory perception, Saturday at 6 a.m. You participate. Now, that's a lot to ask college students to get up that early on a Saturday, and only 24% of the people that they asked to do that said yes, so 24%. Now, this is what they did to double the percent. It went from 24 to 56%. This is all they did. Follow me. We're doing a study on thinking processes. Will you participate? Well, yeah. It's on Saturday. Are you available? Yeah. It's at 6 a.m. Can you make that time? Now, if you followed me on that, it's pretty much the exact same thing, but we took one big question and converted it into three smaller questions to three smaller yeses, went from 24% to 56%. You should be thinking this through. Okay, so that part in your presentation, move over the phone or face-to-face, you're getting the no. How can you break it down to three, four different smaller yeses, and that will double, or into the studies, that will double the amount of people that will say yes. That's also true. Would you hear, can I have 5 minutes of your time? Do you mind if I get that stain out on your carpet? Those type of things. You test driving a car. They don't charge you for test drives. They make it as easy as possible. And that is what you're looking for when you talk about foot in the door technique. There's a lot of ways to do that. Even getting people to wear a little banner or a little sticker about the company is a foot in the door. Get them to say, yeah, someday I might support it, is a foot in the door. Getting them to take a $5 order or getting a free sample is easier than a $200 order. So if you get, instead of getting a $200 order, if you got smaller orders along the way to equal that, that's much easier. And that's what you're looking for. Like, there was one interesting study done where they approached people living in their homes, and they asked them to commit to put a little 3-inch sign in their window in their home that said, be a safe driver. Okay, pretty simple. Hey, we're trying to, you know, have people safe drivers in the neighborhood. There's kids. Will you put this in your window that shows people that you're committed to being a safe driver? So this was only a 3-inch square little sign, a little small thing, put it in the window, no big deal. Then they came back and asked people to put this huge billboard in their sign. I mean, we're talking about a big billboard in their sign that said, be a safe driver. Here's what's interesting. When they asked them just to do the billboard first, very few people said yes. But when they did the sticker first, then the big billboard, the compliance, and this was 2 weeks later, increased by 76%. So something to really think through as we talk about what's called the FITD, the foot in the door. Because the reason this works so well is that you're getting little commitments along the way, little yeses along the way. You say, yes, that will help me. I can see how that will work. Yes, that will make a difference. That matters. Even if they're just shaking their head up and down, they can vocalize it, they can raise their hands, they can say, uh-huh. All those would count down that path. That is why this is so effective. It works. It's proven to work. In fact, they did a couple studies here that are important, too, is when you get the commitment, it makes a huge difference down the road. For example, this study, one of my favorite studies, this was done at a beach near New York City, and they had a Confederate, that's someone who's in on the study, posing as a thief. So this thief comes up and puts a towel about down from 5-10 feet from somebody else, puts the towel down and the CD player down, lays there for about 5 minutes and walks off. Okay? Walks off. This is what happens. Here comes a Confederate posing as a thief, steals this CD player, and everybody was watching, or the person was watching, and you have to think to yourself, okay, what percent are going to risk personal harm to stop them? And it was very, very, very low. It was 5%, okay, very low. So 5% stopped to risk personal harm. And they continued with a couple different studies, and it went up to 20%. So anywhere from 5 to 20% would stop them. Now, here's where it went up to 95%. They would put the towel down. They would get up after 5 minutes and say, hey, will you watch my things? And the person says, yes. And the person walks off. Here comes the thief, steals the radio. Now, 20% to 95% risk personal harm. Just a simple yes, a simple commitment goes a long, long way. Now, we know that small commitments lead to larger commitments, especially in a negotiation. Small compromises lead to big compromises. You always start with the easiest things first. That's why in negotiation we always do the set-aside technique. If you're talking, we can hear you. Please hit star 6. Hear someone talking in the background, star 6 will mute you out for those of you that aren't live. So, set aside. So if you get stuck on price, let's set that aside. Start doing the small things, that leads to large commitments. We know that written commitments are more powerful than verbal commitments. Getting someone to write it down, to send you an email, even if it's on a napkin at a restaurant. Hey, this is what we agreed to and initial it or do that. That does it. Even when it's public, if there's 3-4 people around, that's more of a commitment than if there's one person around. If there's a room of 50, that's a bigger commitment than 5. So those are some things. Make them small commitments lead to large commitments. Get them to write it down. Make it public if you can. Even if you stepped out of your office and say, hey, we just agreed on this. This is what we're doing. Letting somebody else know increases the chances that they're going to keep that commitment. Because it's human nature sometimes to really not remember what they said they were going to do. And that's why before any negotiation, you reviewed what you've talked about. You review what you've agreed upon. that kind of sets a standard of agreement, number one. And number two, there's no misconceptions, because the brain is not a hard drive. It doesn't recall everything perfectly every time. As you know, every time someone tells a story, it changes a little bit. So you need to get on the same page. And last point before I open it up for questions, I'm turning that no into yes, is under getting in the brain of your consumer. Whether it's a website, over the phone, a presentation, a negotiation, it doesn't matter how we're programmed. We're very skeptical now. There's a study done by Knox and Inkster. They went to a couple horse racing tracks. Most of it was done in Canada. And people were waiting in line to place a bet. So they had a series of questions, and embedded in those questions, they were trying to figure out how confident people were in their decision on the horse they're going to bet on. Now, this is before they put the money down. Then once they put the money down and bet on a horse, they interviewed them again, a few more questions, and embedded in there was a question to find out how confident they were. They worded it a little bit differently. So the question is, when you look at consumers or people placing a bet, were they more confident before they made the decision or after they made the decision? So this is human nature. Before, the human brain needs to be right. So, and this is before the race happened, by the way. So they don't know what the results are. And the human brain needs to be right. So once we put the money down, we feel more confident because we made the decision and we feel more confident. Now, what does that mean to you? A lot. Basically, when you're talking to somebody, when you're communicating with them, or they come to your website, they're looking for every reason why it won't work, why they shouldn't do it, why the product won't help them out. But once they've seen one thing that fulfills their need, then they start looking for every reason they should do it. I mentioned earlier, one of the big complaints is vomit. See, especially like something like a home-based business, there might be 20 reasons to do it. Hey, find the one. Say, here, well, yeah, what does a perfect home-based business look like to you? Well, yeah, that's what it does. Okay, that's what we're doing, and get them started. And then fill in the blanks later. They don't need to know everything about the car or the photocopy or your product or your insurance or anything that you're doing. They don't need to know everything. Get them rolling, filling out the paperwork, and then you can fill in the blanks later. When you buy a car, the last car I bought, it's had over 100 buttons and switches on it. And if they would have gone through every single one, it would have been too much. We went through and counted them. It was just too much. And they just, hey, what does it need to do? Here it does. Fill in the blanks later. So once you've found the one or two things, now their brain has shifted to find reasons why it was a good decision, why they should do it, but go down that road. Don't continue listing. Let's put it this way. Once they've mentally committed to do it, it's a good thing. Get the ball rolling, seal the deal, do the paperwork, get it signed, get the credit card, whatever you need to do. Then from there, oh, by the way, there's a few more things you need to know. You do that after you've sealed the deal, because now they're looking for reasons to do that. Because if you do it before, now you've probably given them reasons not to do it. That's how it's set up. So that's the different ways to turn the no into yes. All right. Hopefully that's good. All right. Now, with that, those on the replay line, in fact, let me tell the group, the replay line is located at whywhypersuasion.com. Just click on recording. That gets posted after the call. The audio will be on there. Questions can be submitted there, too. If there's questions, if you're listening on the replay, I know a lot of, especially international, a lot of people are doing replay. And if you do have a question, either zap me an email through the net or you can ask me over the phone. I'll be happy to take those. So let's do the phone first. Any questions over the phone? As I'm getting some via the net. All right, those are easy on me. All right. All right, get a question here about listening. It says, Kurt, why are we so bad at listening? I'll give you a list of reasons. Here are the big ones. We're so consumed about thinking about a response or cutting in or getting our word in edgewise before we forget that we don't truly listen. A lot of times we're prejudging or jumping to conclusions. I think a big one is we've never really been trained. going through school is not good listening training. It's hearing training. You hear it, regurgitate on a test, you pass. But there's really not a two-way dialogue a lot most of the time. I mean, you have a few questions here and there, but not truly listening. The big one, too, here, as far as why we're not good at listening, is that the brain thinks very fast. See, our brain can cruise up. When we're thinking without verbalizing it, we can go to about 400 to 800 words per minute. I mean, that's how fast we can think. We talk on average probably about 120 to 150 words per minute. Do you see the difference between 150 words per minute and 400 words per minute? So that gives us a lot of times, whoop, squirrel. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Up. It's my favorite part of these dogs up collars, like squirrel. And in a lot of ways we're that way. You know, we're squirrel or whatever it is, we're easily distracted. When I train people to do persuasive presentations, that's one of the first things I almost always do is let's speed up, speed up, speed up. Let's do 180 words per minute. Let's speed up. Because when you speak fast, now you want to vary your rate, but the overall average needs to be fast. You are actually more persuasive because people are concentrating more to listen, which gives them less time to veer off and see the squirrel or think about a counter argument. So that's very helpful. So there's the two sides, getting people to listen more. And you can do that with, you know, your vocals, tell me more. And, of course, if you're doing a presentation or doing something over the phone, talking fast can be a good thing. As long as, again, we clarify that, you're varying the rate. You just did super fast all the way through, that would annoy people. But if you're slowing down at certain points and speeding up, but if you increase your average, that is very, very helpful to people. Great question. Again, so a question, the second part of this question is as far as getting training or practice. Well, if you're married, there's some great practice there, learning to listen to each other. There's family gatherings, there's children. There's so many opportunities where we can truly listen and help out. One thing I do recommend with people, if you can, whether it's face-to-face or over the phone, if you can encourage yourself to take notes. So if you're the type of person that wants to cut in, get your word in, and before you forget, if you make a quick note to write it down to get back to that, then, that relieves a lot of stress and tension to where you know it's written down and you can really concentrate on what they're saying. Okay? Good point. Any other questions? Just jump in if you're on the phone. I've got a list here from the net. If you're on the phone, please jump in and let me know. Can replays, you're going to have to email me. Kurt, what did you mean about jumping to conclusions when you're listening? I've talked about this, I think it was maybe it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, that when we talk about trust and confidence, that we cross a line from confidence to cockiness or arrogance when we assume we know what they're saying without restating. So what you mean is, what you're saying is, this is what's holding you back. That's important, because what they're saying, what they mean, can be two different things. Or maybe it's an objection you hear over and over again. If you just want to jump in and solve it and move on, but if you break in, then you come across as arrogant or cocky. Let them finish. That's what we're pausing for replying. Don't assume you know. Just because they said it doesn't know it's true. For example, if you were selling water park passes for the summer, kids like going to water parks, and it was a great deal. Now, well, you know, it's too expensive. You knew that wasn't true. So you're saying it's too expensive. Well, no. It could be something. Maybe they're afraid of the water. Maybe they don't want to be seen in a swimsuit. Those things take time to really unearth. Sometimes it's just easier. Well, I'm time. I don't know. I'm going to think about it. So don't jump to conclusions that that's the actual objection that they have. Ask those questions. Get them to restate. Will go a long way when you're working with them. Good question. Anybody else?
Hey, Kurt, I have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
This is my first time tonight. And
Welcome.
Thank you. You talked about either finding the need or creating the need. And could you give an example of creating the need, maybe using real estate as an example?
Okay, so what I meant is, so if someone's calling you based off a message or some real estate that they've seen, okay, you know that they've already thought it through. There's something that they're looking for, so they don't need a data dump. they're looking for something specific. So you need to say, so what interested you in the home, or what is the main thing that you liked? What's the most important thing about purchasing a home or saving your home from foreclosure would be the questions that you add. Now, if you create a need, it could be as simple as, you know, what are the top two things you're looking for in a home? And then listen to, well, I'm looking for something that's in a great school area. And they, well, you know, the schools in this neighborhood have been ranked number one. And that's kind of creating, going along with their need, but you're creating it too. But it might be out of the blue. If you're calling them out of the blue and they have no idea what you're doing, then you've got to create the need. For example, in real estate, what if I could, you're calling someone out of the blue, you're talking to someone out of the blue, what if I could show you how to get a 200% return on an investment in real estate in less than 3 weeks? Now, I just made up those numbers, kidding, don't hold me to them. But all of a sudden, they're like, you've created a need. They're like, well, wait, well, let's talk about it. What are you talking about? That sort of thing. If I was even talking to you, my world's persuasion and influence. So someone says, hey, well, what do you do for a living? You're like, you know, have you ever had a prospect that needed your product, liked your product, could afford your product, and they didn't buy from you? I make sure that never happens again. And then I just shut up, and I planted that seed. Now, all of a sudden, they weren't interested in before. Now, all of a sudden, wait a minute, or interested. Or maybe you're going to you see someone at the mall. Hey, what do you do? You know, have you ever gone through your dream home, and it was perfect. It's everything you wanted, but you didn't think you could afford it. I make that home a reality. You see what we're doing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So those are the different things. Now, if they're calling you, you don't need to do that. You just got to identify, okay, what is it the main thing? Why were they looking? Why are they calling? What's going on? Versus if you're out of the blue or you meet somebody or you're marketing, doing email marketing with products that maybe people aren't sure that they know that they need, that would be the same type of thing.
Cool. Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. You bet. Any other questions out there? Minutes left. Let me answer one more question here, and then we'll let you go. What type of questions to use and how many questions are too many. You know, like I said, the doctor example, I don't know, I guess there is a point where there's too many. We always train, like in seminars, to always answer a question with a question. And then, in fact, if you ever lose control of a conversation, asking a question or gain control. See, questions are always answered, period. They might not vocalize it, but when you ask a question, they might get answered just in their brain, but it does create that mental involvement. I mentioned, just kind of repeat, you always ask the easiest question first, and I'm always recommending do open-ended questions. Don't ask necessarily yes-no questions, especially in the beginning. Say, well, what does that look like to you? How do you feel? What does the perfect solution look like to you? If a genie appeared and made this situation all better, what would that look like? Those are open-ended questions. Those are always the best to find out information. And then they say, oh, really? Well, tell me more. And you're just going for information. Questions like, well, you know, how do you feel about, or what do you think about, what's the most important thing about, are great questions. But the best questions are always going to be open-ended questions. Those are the type of questions that you want. Again, easiest questions first. You know, there's leading questions that you can talk about. In fact, it's interesting when you talk about questions and lawyers and the words that they use. There was a study done where, and watch how these questions kind of lead the conversation. So there's this car accident. It was on video, or it was recorded. They had three groups of people in three different rooms. And they all saw the same video of cars crashing into each other. Okay, all saw the same one. The only thing different, the first group, they said, how fast were the cars going when they contacted each other? Second group, how fast were they going when they hit each other? And the third group was, how fast were they going when they smashed into each other? Okay, again, same video. And then they estimated what they thought, how fast they were going. And there was a 10-mile-an-hour difference between using the word contacted in the question, contacted and smashed. So sometimes when you put the words you use in your questions can be very, very important. And it's good to practice the listing and the questions and turning a no to yes. And then just to remind you, as far as if you want to do business later, Don't get the no. Just get the commitment to be able to talk to him later. The one thing I do want you to work on this week is I want you to look at that point, whether it's leaving a when you're talking to somebody and you're getting a no, I want you to break that down into three smaller yeses, three smaller questions, and see how that helps you out. And that kind of one area where you're getting the kind of resistance or the no, it'll make a big difference in what you're able to do. So those are your persuasion tools this week. Go out there and persuade with power. Are there any last-second questions before I let you go? All right. So have a great week. Again, I'll be posting they'll post that probably the next couple hours on whypersuasion.com. With that, again, have an awesome week, and we'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.